Welcome to Osteocast, where we talk all things osteopathy, functional anatomy, and movement. With your hosts, myself, Colby Brokel,
Amanda Boysen,
and Sarah Pucal.
Hello, and welcome back to Osteocast with your hosts, Sarah, myself, Amanda, and Colby.
Hello.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
So today we are going to have a little bit of a chat. Amanda and myself were at a course last week called Somatic Emotional Release, one of the Upledger cranial courses. So we're just going to relay how the course went, anything we learned from it, what our thoughts are about it. And we're also going to get into a little bit of clinical discussion, questions we have in the clinic as the second part of the podcast for today. Now, I know Colby wasn't at the course with us, but he has taken similar material about a year and a half ago. He did a similar course online, so he'll have some good input to add as well for the discussion.
Yeah, during COVID, it was the online version of some of the lectures, which was good. But at least I have some input to toss into our chat.
Nice. Yeah, you've seen it before. Obviously, we probably had a different experience with it, but still kind of same idea.
Sure.
So just so we're all on the same page here, somatic emotional release is part of the cranial sacral process of treatment and is to help release emotional energy from past traumas that get retained or suppressed in the body. So if you've been in a car accident, for example, and your body got contorted and twisted in different ways, sometimes the only way to help release that entire trauma from the body and fully heal is to use what we call a somato-emotional release. So allowing the energy stored in the tissues to come out of the tissues.
One of the really interesting things they talked about in the course for that to happen, though, was to have the avenue of expression open. So that just means that from a tissue texture perspective and a treatment perspective, that the throat, the mouth, and the tissues leading anterior, posterior, in and around those structures all have to be free from obstruction and restriction in order for that release to be facilitated. And if those structures are open when the traumatic experience happens, or you're in a good emotional state, you're happy, you're joyful, good things are happening around you when that trauma happens, often things aren't stored as deep or as long, you can kind of facilitate that release pretty quickly. Whereas if you're in sort of a negative emotional state, you know, something terrible has happened in your life, or you're in a bad mood when that happens, or some of these avenues of expression aren't open, then that response, your body will hold on to that traumatic response or push that response back into the tissues, and it will be held there as opposed to being released. So just interesting to look at it from that perspective. If you think about why some people say, I don't know why me and not someone else, we had the same kind of experience. So it's interesting to look at it from that perspective.
Really interesting. So state of mind has a lot to do with it. And where you are in that moment, that injury happens.
Well, it just comes back to the osteopathic principle that it's all a unit, right? Mind, body, spirit is all one unit and part of the whole. So taking a look at all those aspects are really important as well.
Yeah, for sure. And we've talked about this. We've talked about this on some minor level in the past on the podcast before, and just with osteopathy in general, and talking about it's a different level of conversation, but psychosomatic or somatocycle lesions that occur. It's kind of down that path, and this is just taking that understanding or that idea and moving towards an actual treatment process for how to go and have that discussion or dialogue throughout treatment to kind of uncover or get into that. And I'm sure you guys have seen this as you were talking about with car accidents and the state of mind, or when you have a patient who you may go through quite a bit of physical treatment and things get better, but they never stay better. And part of that is the connection to the mind or the spirit that comes in these other levels. So taking that into consideration is definitely something that you will need to do with some patients or refer out depending on how comfortable you are with it.
For sure. And just the importance of having other people in your on your team or in your corner if you are starting to do any of this work. It's important that you have a support system around you because you are dealing with traumatic responses, and that's there are parts of that that are not in our scope of practice. So having, you know, a psychotherapist or a social worker or whoever it is that you find necessary for your path of healing is important to keep them in the loop and on your team.
Absolutely.
Definitely. So do we want to talk a little bit about the somatic emotional process itself?
Yeah. Tell us what it is.
Yeah. So basically you're, as Amanda suggested, you need to do some mechanical treatment to free the avenue of expression. So making sure that the thoracic inlet is opened up, the throat is open, the hyoid bone is moving, as well doing some cranial work on the cranium itself through the facial bones and then into the palate, hard and soft tissue. And then to the base of the tongue or the root of the tongue, and as well as the base of the mouth. And all that is doing is just freeing up the ability to speak and the ability to share any emotions, any trauma, anything that comes up for you on the table. Because as we know, a lot of us like to swallow down our feelings or swallow down suppressed emotions. So this is just a way to really help start the process and just allow anything that come up that might be released throughout the whole treatment process. And then as we continue on through the somatic emotional release, there's a little bit of what we call a dialoguing happening between the practitioner and the patient. And that can be a verbal or a nonverbal dialogue. And you are communicating with the patient to let them know that they are safe, that they're in a safe space, they're here now to experience anything that needs to be released from the body. And you're really using, this is when your palpation is key, you're really utilizing your hands and your palpation skills to feel when the cranial sacral rhythm becomes still, to know when you've hit a spot of the body or a spot in your discussion with them where there has been maybe a bit more emotion stored elsewhere, and staying in that place as you allow that release to happen.
Yeah, so just to touch before we dive into that, when you loop back to osteopathic principles and how you deal with osteopathy as far as Sarah was talking about clearing the path for expression, we do the exact same thing with other areas of the body or other thoughts or systems as far as clearing drainage for blood flow or lymphatic flow and making sure that there's good pathways for the nerves to have good neurological control before necessarily treating the affected area or region that you're talking about. So it's the exact same principles. It's just working on the emotional or the non-physical side of things.
Such an important distinction to make because intention is everything. And so even though we're using some of the, maybe some of the tools or the techniques that you have in your back pocket for how to address certain things, where our intention is changing about how we're using those tools to affect the body in a different way.
Yeah. But still rooted in the principles, which is pretty neat.
Correct.
And we can feel that mechanically through the body, right? When you, someone comes in and they have a pelvis that barely moves and you start asking questions about their past history to figure out why are their tissues not moving? Why are they kind of stuck in an internal rotation pattern? There always is a bigger story to the picture because the body wants to self-heal and self-regulate. So there has to be trauma for the body to not be working properly or for, you know, the pelvis to stop functioning the way it should. So just something to keep in mind as well when we go kind of digging to really understand the full picture.
For sure. And just important for listeners to understand that our medium is still to work in the tissues and on the tissues and provide treatment to the tissues. So we're talking about all of these things, but we're still providing osteopathic manual treatment for the body or to the body.
Yeah, that's such a good point, Amanda, that it is. We are touching the patient. Mm-hmm. We are not hovering above the body.
No, we're interacting with those tissues and providing treatment in response to how those treatments are being affected under our hands during the treatment. So reading, reacting to that, and providing the treatment that's necessary.
And that's such a good point, because with osteopathy, there isn't you're never going to sit down and say, I'm only going to use this one technique or this one treatment style. That's the beauty of osteopathy. It's so all-encompassing to whatever the human body and that body on the table needs at that time, that you can pull in all the different tools that you have learned to get the results you need and to have that client get off the table feeling better.
Yeah. And just goes back to making sure you're providing the best treatment for the client.
Definitely. So Colby, would you say kind of what we've talked about so far with the SCR process and then the course was similar to what you experienced when you did your training?
Yeah, Sarah. So the course or the lectures that I took were, he talked to some extent about the avenue of expression and then connecting that with the cranial treatment, whether they're going through the base of the neck all the way through the oral diaphragm and then into the hard and soft palate. And then the emotional release part was less of a lecture as far as how to do this and what to do. And it was a demonstration. So Upledger was actually going through a treatment from start to finish. And I don't remember how long the video was, but it was dialogue as he went and talking about it as he went. It must have been one of the courses, you know, like the hotel conference room courses they've done in the past. And So yeah, he was going through that. It was probably about an hour and 20 minutes where he went through the treatment and discussed the dialogue with the patient and then seeing the patient's response both physically on the table as well as verbally afterwards. So it's right on par with what you guys have been talking about or what you guys experienced in the course. I'm sure you guys just had a little bit more focused, guided training as far as how to progress from one thing to the other or what to look for when a certain response happens, et cetera. And in the lectures that I did, there was no discussion on being safe and building a network around you and what's within scope and what's not within scope, et cetera, which I'm sure you guys had that discussion as well.
Definitely. Yeah, that was a big part of how to be safe in this work and also stay within your own scope of practice, because none of us are, well, if you're a psychotherapist, then you can work through different avenues of this. But from our perspective, it's a neutral discussion and you're asking the patient more to speak than you're not guiding anything. It's like I said, it's all neutral. So
yeah, as soon as you go past that, or as soon as that's where the conversation's leading, then it's time to refer out and loop that in, because you want to make sure that one, you're as a practitioner, you're within scope, but ultimately it's like scope is an important part about it for liability for practitioners. But ultimately, if you don't have the understanding and ability to deal with the conversation or the dialogue that's being had, then you need to refer to someone who's trained and knows how to do it, because it's very detrimental to a patient to open a can of worms that you can't help with or don't know how to deal with, and then almost abandoning it opposed to having a proper referral system. So part of that's understanding where your limitations are. And that's not just based on the course that you do and the education you have, but personally what your limitations are as a person to have that conversation, and also what you can handle, because you want to make sure that you're not putting yourself out there where you get burnt out, it's not the right term, but that those traumatic experiences or those dialogues create a change in your own body, because that can be detrimental as well. So when you're starting to experience that, or when you think that's something that can be happening, you need to take the step back and refer to the professional that can deal with it. And as long as you have a team or someone that you've met and dialogued with before, as Amanda was saying before, they understand what you're doing or have at least a brief understanding of it, and they know how they can take over from there or how you can work together. But you want to make sure that you're doing it not only for the patient to not disturb them, but also for yourself so that you can continue to practice and treat the other patients that you have that day or that week or that month without changing how you are working.
That was one other thing that we haven't talked about that we talked about in the course as well is transference. So whether that be the patient transferring things to you as an individual or you as an individual transferring something from yourself to the patient. So that might be in terms of guided discussion or treatment process as well. So making sure that you're in that neutral space or you're grounded prior to treatment is a big thing. So taking control of your own health and well-being and making sure that if you're working through this work with other patients, that you're doing some of that yourself to make sure that you can stay and remain neutral in those conversations. If you are choosing to do some dialoguing or even just with treatment, you're not, you know, passing anything to the patient or taking on anything from the patient as well. So that's also another thing worth mentioning. So in talking about all these things, I'm curious how you guys have worked this type of work into your practice, or maybe the steps you took to kind of bring this into your practice. I know we've talked a little bit prior to now about just working on these things for a little bit of time outside of the clinic or outside of working with patients to make sure that your hands are comfortable with treatment and you're practicing these skills before you bring them in. So I'm curious where you're at with it and how you kind of went about bringing that into the clinical setting.
Yeah, very cool. So I would say the first step, at least on my end, is when I do my health history, making sure that they do have some type of psychological support. So as you mentioned, Amanda, psychotherapist, social worker, just somebody on their team. And if they don't, and it definitely seems like it is needed, and we need to go a little bit deeper into the treatment process, that needs to be taken care of first before we can do that. Just as you mentioned, we don't know what will come up. And if they don't already have that support there, you know, we are not trained to be that support for them. And we need to make that clear to the patient. Secondly, definitely making sure that, you know, typical treatment process, not really delving into the work until all the avenues are open. So making sure that avenue of expression we talked about is open, making sure the diaphragms are open. So just making sure that the body actually has a clear passage of drainage to let any results, any treatment that may come up be dealt with in the body to the best degree possible. And then finally, when everything is prepped, we can start to just dive into just figuring out where there might be emotion stored in the body and just talking about it with the patient. And most people are very receptive to the idea because a lot of the time it is an area of their body that has been an issue for a while, maybe a reoccurring injury, a reoccurring problem for them that they just have never had full relief from. So it's a very open idea when you start talking to them about why this possibly hasn't gotten better to this point.
For myself, I don't use it a whole lot. I find that I'm more likely to refer to a psychotherapist or a social worker when something comes up that does need to have some of this treatment. But I do want to make note here that it's not something that every patient receives or requires. And I know it's always something new and interesting when you learn a new course or a new skill and you want to use it on everyone. But there is really a time and place for it. And sometimes attempting to create some level of dialogue like this may bring up is not appropriate for the patient. So just if you're doing it and trying to practice with it, just understanding that it's not a form of treatment that every single patient needs or requires, which I think is an important thing to mention. But for myself, I use it when it's necessary with patients as far as a dialogue. And really, it's more organic in nature than anything else. There's not really a point in time where I think to myself, oh, I need to do SER. It's not about following that particular form of it. It's just when dialogue needs to happen because a patient's not letting something go, then I may have a conversation and just be like, hey, I can see that there's something going on here. Would you want to talk about it? And if they say yes, then you have a little conversation. And if they say no, then you don't. But I think it's really important.
Yeah, patient consent.
Yeah, but I think it's really important just to note that it's not something that every single patient will need. So it's not something that is like, when you go into, I know sometimes we've talked about this before, when you go into clinic and you're really working on, I don't know, let's say shoulders or neck or whatever it may be, where every single patient you assess it or go through it, this is one of those things that you won't work on with all of your patients as far as a learning experience, because not everybody needs it. And you don't want to open that can of worms with every single patient.
Yeah. And I do think it is one of the things that will be worked on last, right? So you need to clean up as much mechanical stuff and open up all the other pathways prior to this, any of this work being done.
Yeah.
And even when you're doing this type of work, there's still some form of physical assessment that has to happen before and after treatment.
Yeah.
Because there will be changes in the tissues and you need to be able to quantify what those things are. Yeah. And also be able to speak to the patient about, oh, you know, we saw this type of change throughout the treatment, or be able to kind of record that, those kind of changes for yourself, to see how things were working. And if it's not working, then obviously it's either not the right tool or treatment for the patient, or it's outside of, it's bigger than what you're able to help the patient with. So that can also be used as a form of, hey, you definitely need to be referred to this person, outside of the clinic. So making sure that you stick to working with the tissues and making sure that you're always trying to find those changes is key, so that you can quantify how you're helping the patient. And if you're not helping the patient, knowing when it's time to refer out. So definitely one of the later things in terms of treatment, you want to have all those other pieces cleaned up before you're moving into this kind of work.
And another thing, when you say one of the later pieces in treatment, is that part of it is building rapport with the patient before you go down this pathway, because it's not something you do on the first day, first appointment with a patient.
And I think too, we should just speak briefly about the fact that the patient has to be ready to do this type of stuff, and be willing and wanting to do this type of work and dive into some of this stuff. So there's a portion of consent that has to happen with the patient, so that they understand how this work can be helpful, but also some of the other aspects that they need to do outside of the office with this type of work. So we've talked a little bit about that already.
And being able to, just to hone in on you quantifying what you're doing, Amanda, you should be able to explain your treatment process, what you're feeling, and how you're treating it to the client. Because it's not voodoo, it's not magic. Like, it's based off of anatomy, physiology, and there is a reason for every time we touch the body and move the body in a specific way. So I think that's also really important as a practitioner, is just the patient education piece. And then also for yourself to understand what you're doing and why, and how would you kind of bring that into layman's terms for someone else to understand.
For sure.
Awesome. Any final thoughts on SCR and I guess the treatment process related to that? But I feel like we covered it quite well, friends.
No, I'm pretty happy with that. I think that's pretty good.
The only other thing I can think of is just treatment timing with patients. If you're working on this kind of stuff, they kind of threw out a 6-week mark at the clinic or at the course for us. Doesn't mean that that's correct for every patient, but all that means in my books is that there's obviously needs to be time and space between treatment for the person to work through other things. So when you're diving into this with patients, there's definitely maybe a different course of treatment frequency that you want to be aware of.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And as already mentioned, this is happening later on in the treatment process. So you've gotten to a point where you don't need to see the person every other week or so, because you've moved on from that kind of more phase one or acute to more frequent treatment plan.
Correct. And mechanically they're stable, right, at that point. So it's not something that, they're not in an acute phase of treatment.
Well, in that case, thank you guys for listening to the podcast today. We hope it was an interesting conversation and hopefully spikes some thought for yourselves and for us as well. And if you have any questions or comments, shoot us a message at @osteocast_ or Osteocast on Facebook. I'd be happy to chat and go through that. Otherwise, we appreciate you guys listening, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Thanks for listening.